This is the Banana Data Podcast, a podcast hosted by Data IQ. I'm Trevaini.
And I'm Chris.
And in our bi-weekly episodes, we'll discuss the good, the great, and the ugly of AI. If you're craving even more, check out our 15-minute Banana Bites discussions on Data IQ's LinkedIn and Twitter every Wednesday at 2 p.m. EST. Today, we're talking about the history of CAPTCHA and its many iterations, as well as what ethical implications come out of trying to stay ahead of the curve.
So today, I actually wanted to talk a bit about these weird little quizzes that you end up taking sometimes when you land on a new website. Have you ever seen those things where you have to type in just a jumbled string of words?
Yes, they're very annoying. And it always like takes me at least like 30 seconds to figure out what I need to write.
And sometimes I end up getting them wrong over and over again. And I'm like, it's just really so annoying. We talked about pet peeves in a previous episode. That's one of my pet peeves. I just want to read my article. The story of CAPTCHAs, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole recently, and the history behind how these came to be and the problems they were trying to solve and how they've changed over time is really incredibly insightful. So maybe it would be a fun little story to tell today about what's gone on in the history of CAPTCHA and the implications it's had for us as humans and even some ethics that are involved in consideration of the storyline.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. CAPTCHA is something that we all have to deal with on the internet, but I think so few people even know, one, what does CAPTCHA even stand for? Mm-hmm. And two, why do I have to do this? What is it really doing underneath to prevent bad actors or allow me through? So just for everyone's, I guess, edification, the term CAPTCHA is actually an acronym for Completely Automated Public Turing Test to Tell Computers and Humans Apart.
Big mouthful.
Big mouthful. So I'm really glad they have this acronym. And it was actually coined in the early 2000s after the start of the invention of CAPTCHA around that time. And so I think it has a lot of really interesting parts to it. But what's really maybe confusing to me is the Turing test part. You know, I think this is something we hear about a lot. So before we get started with all of this fun discussion, I'm hoping, Chris, you can explain what is a Turing test in English, please.
So Turing test, it's named after Alan Turing, who was a computer scientist, mathematician in the mid-1900s. And he had this question, and it was essentially boiling down to, can a computer talk like a human being? And, you know, he did a lot of research in this realm, and he came up with this game. And this game was that there would be a human judge, and they would have a text conversation with unseen people, some of which may be computers. And the human judge would evaluate the responses to these questions, and this was the test of whether or not there was a certain level of intelligence. And to pass this test, the computer must be able to replace one of the players in terms of answering these questions and get away with the judge not knowing that they were a computer.
Thanks for explaining that in English. Okay, so that makes sense, knowing that CAPTCHA is a form of a Turing test, right? To make sure if someone's a human or not. And I guess the question is, why do we even need this thing? Well, as you might know or have seen on many websites, there's always someone or some kind of bot producing spam, whether it's, hey, you can earn $10,000 at home, or other kinds of maybe offensive and problematic statements. So the inventors of CAPTCHA actually wanted to build in a fail-safe to say, this entity that's accessing our website isn't actually a human and might be posting things that are offensive or problematic. So let's just cut them out from the very beginning. And we can do that with this automated Turing test.
Yeah. And so it was really interesting that a very simple string of a couple characters that may be garbled or have a little bit of noise put on top or some distortion could really fool a computer in terms of optically parsing that image. But a human being can pretty much piece it together. So that was the impetus behind this Turing test. Again, having a little bit of a barrier for simple computer programs to signing up to thousands and millions of email addresses by taking a human 10 seconds of time to solve something. But there was a little bit of an arms race being set up here, where the more we as humans labeled this kind of data, the smarter the AI became. And eventually there was a bit of a turning point where we essentially trained the AI to solve this relatively straightforward Turing test. And there was a resurgence a few years later called reCAPTCHA. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But it also rose new questions in terms of ethics that are important to be cognizant of.
Yeah, and I think the real underlying issue here is that how do you build systems that need to beat AI when AI is constantly getting better? And sometimes folks need that AI. So a big critique of the entire CAPTCHA system comes from a group of people who are disabled users of the internet and who rely on AI to do this work for them. So you can imagine a CAPTCHA system where it's, please recognize all of the traffic lights in these images and click on those, and then you can go onto our website. Well, if you are vision impaired, then you can't actually do that. So you need a image recognition tool to help you by clicking on the yellow traffic lights for you and letting you through to the website. But if CAPTCHA is trying to avoid that kind of AI from being able to do that, then you're now blocking a subset of the population that isn't actually a spam bot, that is a human, but a human that relies on AI. And so I think it's a very interesting dilemma for this sort of CAPTCHA world of how do you know if somebody is behind the AI or not? Is it truly a spam bot, or is it someone saying, hey, please help me out and accomplish this task for me? And it's a big problem in the disabled world. And I think it kind of highlights how a lot of the things that we take for granted as users, you know, or even just like users of technology, are not always designed with everyone in mind.
And it's certainly a catch-22, and it's riddled with irony. The kind of process that we've set in place is actually the problem itself. So the question I have is, you know, did we start off on the wrong foot by virtue of creating this system in the first place? Is there a way to get around the problems that we have currently with the CAPTCHA system? Or are these, you know, kind of ambiguous questions that we don't necessarily have the answer to?
I think that's a great question, Chris. And I don't think anyone's really quite figured out exactly how to do this. You know, if you look at the broad history of CAPTCHA, knowing that there's a lot of different developments in place, broadly speaking, CAPTCHA started off as this image recognition or sort of word recognition program. And the idea was that, well, computers can't read or AI can't read a word or text if it's distorted in some way. Okay, well, great. So we'll distort it. And then we have created a reasonable Turing test. Well, that Turing test not only shuts out an entire population of people who rely on AI to navigate the internet, but as AI develops and gets better at doing what we want it to do, like image recognition or text recognition, it can now break those CAPTCHA systems. So then you have things like, okay, we'll do image recognition. Again, our AI has developed quite substantially in being able to recognize images. And so how do you build a system that can reasonably distinguish between whose AI and whose AI being powered by a human?
Yeah, and I wonder as well, and I don't have an answer to this question clearly, but how do we quantify the benefits that we're getting versus the detractions that we're getting? So the benefits and the advances in AI, I certainly think are groundbreaking in terms of the image recognition and so on and so forth. But is it worth it if we are preventing a lot of people from, you know, accessing the internet or creating these new problems? Where does that balance fall? And how do we solve for that?
Yeah. So what I'm trying to highlight here basically is that one, the CAPTCHA systems themselves aren't well designed to be inclusive. And CAPTCHA is always at risk of becoming outdated as AI grows. And so it's this ever-evolving situation. But then because of the origins of CAPTCHA, the design itself is already biased towards keeping people who use AI to navigate the world, keeping those people out. So does it mean we need to redesign CAPTCHA altogether? Does it mean that there's a new sort of framework that we need to be put in place? I don't know. And so to be fair to the developers and engineers behind CAPTCHA and reCAPTCHA and all these things, there is a serious attempt to make these tools more accessible. Now, with new sorts of, unfortunately, tracking systems, we can actually, you know, see, is the mouse moving in a way that shows human spontaneity? And we can use that to assess whether or not the person or the user itself is actually a human as the Turing test. So to be fair, they are trying new ways. But I think what we started off this conversation with is two steps forward, one step back. And that's all well and good. Now we're using data that allows us to track how people interact. But what if you're a user who doesn't use a mouse with your hands and you use your mouse again through an AI? Well, that mouse isn't going to move around in a human way. It's going to move around in a robotic way. I think that, like, fundamentally, this is the challenge for CAPTCHA or reCAPTCHA, which is how do you build systems that need to keep AI out, even if that AI is being used for good?
Yeah, it seems like this problem is we're circling the drain. And, you know, there's a lot of benefits and a lot of solutions that are coming about by virtue of accounting for people who may be blind or people who may need the artificial intelligence to help them solve the initial versions of CAPTCHAs. But every time we put something in place to make a solution, there's always another subset of users or another subset of individuals that it doesn't work for. So in light of this kind of putting band-aids on wounds, there is another perspective here that we may want to chat a little bit about, which is ethical concerns in general around CAPTCHAs. So for one, when we talked about reCAPTCHA and using the human power to translate these documents, that's really great because we're digitizing these archives for the New York Times or helping with Google Maps in terms of performing better and understanding street signs. But that's a little bit of free labor. And I don't know how people feel comfortable with that, or even in terms of the I'm not a robot CAPTCHAs. Yes, it is helpful in terms of preventing machines from spamming everybody with comments on a blog. But again, the data that's being analyzed may or may not be sensitive and has to do with what you've been doing on the internet and how you're behaving. And I don't know if everybody is cognizant of all the data that they are unleashing into, you know, the CAPTCHAs while they're using them, but something that we should be very mindful of.
Yeah, I think that it's important to recognize that there's more to the ethical considerations of CAPTCHA. I think the issues for disabled folks is very real and very pertinent. And then recognizing beyond that, there's even more. So like you say, do I really want a CAPTCHA system tracking how I use the internet and using that as a judge of whether or not I'm human? I think it's an interesting dilemma, right? I want to use the internet in a way where I don't have to deal with crazy spam bots or whatever, but I don't want to shut out people who can't access things. Every time I click on an image, you know, I'm feeding the underlying model for Google or whoever it might be. I don't think that that's fair, but I do also want, I want a safe internet, right? Or a spam-free internet. It's probably a trade-off that we should be consciously making.
I wonder if there's a way to rethink the entire CAPTCHA system. Like, is there a way that we could have a solution that serves everyone well, but also keeps the internet safe? I don't know. Like, that's a really tough nut to crack. And I think that everybody who's been working on CAPTCHAs over the last decade plus has kept this at the forefront of their minds, but nobody really has the answer.
As far as I can see, the only way around it is you have human moderators who are checking people as they come in through the door, so to speak. That's fine. But one, that's an incredible use of human power. And two, that's rife with sort of its own sort of biases and things that come to play. I think a good step forward first is to bring people who are disabled into the conversation, right? I wonder how many CAPTCHA engineers and designers have actually brought in folks to help with that design. I'm sure that now there's more of that happening. And if anyone out there knows of designers that are working with CAPTCHA systems and disabled folks, that's fantastic. Please share with us. But I think that inclusivity at the beginning is really important. And then as CAPTCHA grows and becomes inclusive in the right ways, then you have the other sort of considerations of how do we stay one step ahead of AI to consider. So I think there's, like, for CAPTCHA, like, there are so many different issues. You can't just say that we need to redesign it, because in fact, there's multiple aspects that need that redesign.
Do you know what my biggest issue with it is?
Oh, boy.
No matter how hard I try, 9 times out of 10, I just can't solve them. So basically, yeah. Trevaini, this is how I'm telling you that I'm a cyborg, and I'm going to really need your help, human in the loop, to help me solve these captchas.
There you go. Let it be known. You heard it here first. Chris is a cyborg.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. This is going to be the dilemma for captcha. It's going to be the dilemma as we develop more technology in the future. So aside from the issues for disabled folks, there is actually another sort of ethical implication of captcha, which is the use of human labor for these systems, right? Like, I know that when I'm going and clicking on, this is a traffic light, this isn't a traffic light, I'm probably helping some underlying algorithm learn more, and I'm like probably labeling their data for them. So Chris, you had mentioned reCAPTCHA earlier on. I'm curious to know a little bit more about what are the ethical implications of that along these lines?
So I think there was an intention to say, hey, there's so much human power behind figuring out these CAPTCHAs. How do we harness it and actually use it for something rather than solving these little puzzles? So reCAPTCHA came about where rather than having one word, you'd have two. And these were optical images of the New York Times database of various books out there. And the human was used to label some of these words that the computer could not understand. So one of the words we knew the solution to, the AI knew the solution to. The other, the human was asked to label, and you're getting a lot of free labor there by virtue of having a human label all these documents. And theoretically, this is all well and good because we are digitizing millions of books and having them searchable on the internet. But then again, all the human power that's being used here is uncompensated for.
Yeah, I think that's such a big factor in this. You know, okay, fine. I'm helping your underlying algorithm. I'm helping you label something. But I don't really know that I'm doing that unless I'm in the field of AI and data science. And I think like even the simplest thing could just be your responses are used to help build out XYZ, right? Like a little like statement somewhere so that at least I know, okay, what I'm doing is actually being used elsewhere down the line. I think that's the underlying issue with so much of what we talk about with data privacy is that we don't even know what's being collected or when it's being collected, or why it's being collected. If we at least knew that, I think that sort of ethical consideration for this human labor of CAPTCHA would feel a little less grimy. If people aren't aware that they're doing this, it creates a potential for this sort of snowball effect. Down the line, you know, all of a sudden your CAPTCHAs are making you do some kind of complex computation, and that computation is feeding into an algorithm that's actually meant to do some harm. The issue is, again, where you don't know what you're doing or what you're supporting.
We're all currently perceivably contributing to a greater good, but there could be a turning point down the line where the greater good is not so clearly quote unquote good. And where does that line fall? It may be different for everybody.
You know, what I think I'm hearing from our conversation is that there has been some great development around CAPTCHA, and it's actually encouraged a lot of interesting research and development in the field of AI. But that doesn't mean that there aren't still a lot of questions that we can raise about it, you know, around access for disabled people, around the ethical considerations, around the use of our data. I'm sure that this is an ongoing field of research for a lot of folks. And I hope that as we go, as we progress in our AI journey, we're able to start answering some of these questions. Today's AI pioneer is Amy J. Coe, a professor at the University of Washington's Information School and a director of the Code and Cognition Lab, where she studies the human aspects of programming. Her latest work investigates effective, equitable, and scalable ways for humanity to learn computing. You can find more about her at her website, linked in the show notes.
That's all we've got today in the world of banana data. We'll be back with another podcast in 2 weeks. But subscribe to the Banana Data newsletter to read these articles and more like them. And we've got links for all the articles we discussed today in the show notes below. Until next time.